And welcome to our episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. We are back after a week absence. Blame Tyler. I am your host, Triforce Todd, and join me today is, of course, Wario Will.
Right, finally, my copy has came in now because of sentimental. Oh, what is this? This dread. Oh,
yeah. No, that was last
okay.
month.
Yeah, it's okay. The Atlas. I can see why this game has been revered for so long, and oh boy, the pain! The pain!
And Tellius Tyler is also here.
Yes, I have not gotten to get SMT5 yet. It's painful. I'm broke right now after a big trip to Denver, Colorado. So if anybody wants to send me the game, I will gladly accept it, and I will give you a shout-out right here on the pod. So there you go.
All right. Well, again, we do apologize for last week. There was just a lot going on. Tyler had his thing. I was going to be getting up early in the next morning to do a con. And so it was just best for us to skip a week. But now we are back, and we have some very interesting topics to discuss. But we'll get all started off with, what have you been playing? Oh, I haven't been playing much. I have not. Because I had this thing called a Comic-Con that I had to go and do. And there was wrestling over the weekend that I had to go and watch. So the only thing I really had access to was Shock Fire Emblem Heroes. Hashtag not a shock. Been enjoying the Tempest Trial. Okay, I want to talk about that really quick. They are dragging this storyline. Like, this was supposed to be how Fjorm dies, and now it's become a thing about gods and prophecies and the All-Creator. And now there's a bet going on between Thor and Loki, which you know something is going to go wrong with that. And, you know, Lajarn and Fjorm are... It's like, this should have been like a three-part thing, and we're almost on part six. So, like, can we wrap this up?
I know. I've been retired. Like, I was out of retirement. I came out of retirement, like, halfway through, and I played, like, two of them. And then I retired again for, like, two more months. And it's still going on.
Yeah. It's a lot. But
it's definitely granted. We are right now in Fire and Ice number 4 or 5 now. Granted, with this a separate storyline, and now we are finishing up with the main storyline of this of the steampunk arc.
Yeah.
So granted, it definitely feels a little bit very flat. If anything else, just because like, oh, there's some drama. Oh, not died because protecting dagger and all that. Yeah, like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the book it's, five.
There really
flat.
Is no investment. There's no time to invest in these characters. Like, yeah, it's very quick. So,
yeah.
granted, it's pretty flat.
Yeah, and now Dagger is ruling not her kingdom, but is in line to get her own kingdom because her sister died. And I don't know if Dagger and Alphonse are going to get together. I mean, I ship it loud, but I don't know. Like, I don't know how much longer they can reasonably keep this going because every book just seems to get more and more distant and over elaborate. Like, I still don't know half of what happened in book five. Like they only kind of explained the summoner duplicate and how that attached to Raijin and all that. And then there's like Fafnir was a character from another world that we never met before. Like, what? And then Etri, she's been there the whole time and she dies. Because of course she does, because her plan had that one flaw that she didn't anticipate because reasons. It's I mean, I like complicated storylines. Like, I am a fan of when Kojima nails it, but even Kojima would be like, this is too much.
I mean, where are that seems to be really much of a case for going from Intention Software. It's like with each year, they got obviously planned to with a new book. I mean, we're heading to the end of the year now, so maybe they're gonna try like they're just trying to wrap this up because we kind of see this story is really not doing much. Especially now we have so much paralog stories with the like side stories here and there, so maybe that's kind of like it drags on. It's interesting how they kind of try to like balance it between the main story and the paralogue story of different separate events. So perhaps that. But you never know with them.
Yeah. Oh, you know one thing I do know, Will?
What?
They will exploit certain characters if they feel they have to. And oh, look at that. It's another Lajarn model. And oh, look at that. She's incredibly revealing in her outfit. It's like they realize, hey, wait a minute. She's a fire woman, which makes her hot. So why don't we just exploit that endlessly?
Hey, but that's Pan of Radiance representation here, so happy thank for that. You got three characters.
Yeah, there actually we got four.
Radiance representation.
Yeah, actually Mia we got four. They throw in Tanith as well.
Oh yeah, and Tanith. Yeah, and Tanith's good too.
Yeah, Mia is like, or Marcia is an absolute must-have. Marcia is one of my favorite characters in all of Fire Emblem.
Yeah, I actually had some good summoning luck. I still did all 40, but I got four of the five, including 5-star Volke. I got Marcia, I got Tanith, and then Lajarn. So I missed Astrid, who I honestly was fine with not getting. I didn't really like her character. Anyway, but I like how, small spoilers, forging, but I haven't done much of it, but forging bonds for Tanith is she meets her wedding dress self.
Yep.
Now that's an interaction I want to see, because, yeah, Tanith is not the kind of person to get married. At all, and I know it's just for a festival or whatever, but she doesn't know that. So, oh well. Now, in terms of the Comic-Con I went to, there was actually an incredible amount of Nintendo cosplays that I saw, including I saw multiple Lucinas. I think I saw one Marth. There were two Azuras, or Azura, however you say her name. I even did a duet of "You Are the Ocean's Gray Waves" with one of them. You're welcome, and it was beautiful. Obviously, I saw a literal Mario party, Mario, Luigi, couple Toads. I saw one Bowser. Tyler, I saw a Eggman.
Yo, that's sweet.
Yeah, he was evil. He said my shoe was untied, and it was not. He's like, "Why did you believe me? I'm evil." I was like, "But you're not. That's just mean. I thought I really was untied." So yeah. Let's see. Who else did I see? There was one Princess Peach, I believe. Yeah, I think that was about it. But like, I was surprised by the number of Fire Emblem characters I saw. It's always a crapshoot what you get. And then next month I'm doing C2E2, so I guarantee you I'm going to see a lot more Nintendo characters. But the cosplays were incredible. Always a joy to see. Oh, that was it. I saw a whole lot of Pokemon characters because Veronica Taylor, the original voice of Ash, who I met at the show, she was there, so like there was a whole bunch of Pokemon trainers and Pikachus. There was like five different Team Rocket duos in various forms, including one who had Meowth striped all over her. One was a parent duo, and their child was Pikachu. So I would joke with them, I was like, "Hey, Team Rocket, you're not supposed to have a Pikachu, like, so let it go." And apparently, the kid actually tried to run away once, not by my words, but just whatever. But it was just hilarious. Oh, I saw Guzma. That was it. I saw one Guzma. He was actually really cool looking, but it's always fun to see, you know, who dresses up as who at these events. So, yeah, fun time. I almost died because of hail, though. That was not fun.
Okay.
Michigan weather. What are you gonna do? So, but yeah. Although my gaming has been light, my experiences have been plentiful. So that was nice. And then of course next week will be Pokemon. So I've got that going for me.
I guess I'll probably jump on next because, like, yeah, as you just celebrated a convention, I myself will be going to a convention for Anime NYC this coming Friday. That's the reason why we're recording this podcast earlier. And yeah, for me, like, one of the main highlights for me is obviously going to meet Zach Aguilar, who you probably know him mostly as the voice of Byleth from Fire Emblem Three Houses. So that's definitely one of my highlights to go.
One pause. I saw a Byleth. I just remembered it was. I saw a male Byleth. It was really cool. Continue.
So yeah. So see Byleth. Of course, there's the Lava Boys. Like you see, Robbie Damon, Max Middleman, Ray Chase. You probably remember Robbie Damon as Hubert from Three Houses as well. And of course, there's other people from Alex Lay, who is the main hero, who is voices hero in Astral Chain. So there's gonna be that. And of course, there's gonna be Michelle Ruff, which I expect to see as well. So overall, all stars coming this coming Anime NYC. I can't wait. So yeah, that's the reason why we're doing this. And in regards to gaming news, as I alluded earlier, I finally got my copy of Shin Megami Tensei 5, and oh boy, this is very Nocturne-esque. If you like your traditional Atlas difficulty back in the heyday, this game is definitely worthy for you. And word of note, if you want to go jump on hard mode, spoilers, it's hard. And the reason, even if you like the hard mode itself, like the your escape rate is low, enemy chance of critiquing you is actually very high. There'd be times I actually died in the beginning area to a Predator, And yeah, it's tough. And there's even just a word of note that even on like the lowest difficulty of casual or even the download easiest difficulty, which is safety, there is a significant jump between those two easy difficulties. So just heads up if you want to go like challenge yourself even on the lowest difficulty. So if you just want to play casually, by all means, I do not blame you. Like people who just want to play on hard mode is basically obviously there for bragging rights, but that's what I want to do. I want the pain. I want that classic Atlas difficulty. And yeah, so for what I've played so far, only like 3 hours. It's good. It's very traditional. Back on the Nocturne press turn, like if you played obviously Elder Shin Megami Tensei or the recent Nocturne HD, you're gonna feel right at home here. So and like the miracles, the events, the story so far, very good. Very good. So I can't wait just to dive in more once I come back from the Anime NYC. And yeah, overall, it's a blast. It's a blast. So definitely highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. And
Yeah, I
just to
have to
wrap it up.
scrap together all my change by that game because it looks incredible. The reviews have been stupendous, and I love the series. So I think if you like RPGs and you haven't played this game and you're intimidated by its name, because I know that's a big thing for a lot of people, like myself originally, before I played 4, whenever I would say, these people say, "What are you playing?" I'd say, "Shin Megami Tensei." I'd get looks like I was insane. Do not be intimidated by the name. It's a hard game. It's a traditional RPG. It's very hard, but this series is phenomenal and absolutely worth it for anybody who loves RPGs, who will love these games.
Yep. Exactly. Like even if you just want to play story casually, you definitely get at least a bit of a challenge because even on easiest difficulty, they can tank quite well. So yes, just FYI, and just wrap it up with the last thing on topic of Fae. Yeah, unfortunately for me, I did not have great luck. Like Todd, I only just got a 5-star queen until my Spark of Legarm. So unfortunately, RNG God is not kind, and I'm now stuck with 5% on the rates. So until the next Mythic banner, who knows? So yeah, that's it for the gaming. So for me.
I have been playing some Sonic Colors Ultimate, actually. I figured, again, whenever I travel, I always buy a game. So I bought Hollow Knight and Sonic Colors Ultimate. And I don't. I Sonic Colors was a game I wanted to buy just out of love for Sonic. But when I played the game back on the Wii, it really stuck with me like most other Sonic games at that point in my life. I preferred Unleashed to it, which I think is a slightly controversial opinion, at least critically.
Very much so.
Colors, yeah, but I stand by it after playing Colors again. I actually have gone through, I went through the game once and I was like, this just isn't that good of a game. I really don't like Sonic Colors that much. I actually thought Forces might be better. But after I started playing through it a second time, I and got used to the jumping mechanics and the level design, I started to enjoy it a lot more. It's not a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. Sonic's jump is extremely finicky. The momentum it's just terrible. The physics of it. His jump is really odd. Like when you just tap A, like if you're playing Mario and you just tap A quickly and let it go, you'll do like a shorter jump. And if you hold A, you'll jump higher. In Sonic, it's the same principle, but his jump is almost like a double jump. Like you jump, and if you just press A, he only goes up like a little bit. But if you hold A, he only goes up like a little bit, stops, hovers for like a split second, and then rises again a little bit further. And it's like it's just really odd. It's hard to control, and I have no idea why they that way, and none at all. And then he has an actual double jump that you can use to like adjust from there. But it's just a strange design choice, and I know the original game was like that. They didn't really touch anything here in that regard, so I was slightly disappointed in that, and I kind of forgot that Colors felt that way. I don't remember Unleashed feeling that way, but there's still a lot to like about the game. The color powers are really good. As far as writing goes for modern Sonic, I think it's like fairly well written. It's pretty funny dialogue. There's not too many moments where you're rolling your eyes. But it's certainly not a must-play game. Now, when it came out on Switch, there were tons and tons of glitches. I'm
Oh
sure
yeah,
some of you saw them. Yeah.
my friend Caro is as big a Sonic fan as you are, and it came out right before the wrestling event All Out, and so there was this string of rest. I promise this makes sense. There was a string of signs by fans of gaming references leading up to the show, and so Kara was so mad at Sonic Colors Ultimate that she made a sign that said "Fix Sonic Colors Ultimate," brought it to the show, and she actually got on camera.
That's great.
Yeah, she's great. But anyway, good
to
do.
That's so funny. And then, well, she got her wish because when I played it, there were some frame drops in Planet Wisp, and that's like a pretty taxing area, and that was it. Like, it ran very smoothly. It's not a beautiful game. I played it mostly in handheld. I did play it on the TV a little bit. It's not, you know, when you think about like the era games, they're always like, I think your brain like upscales them. It just it makes everything look crisper. It's like almost like an HDMI cord in your mind. So I pictured Colors looking pretty much exactly how it looked on the Switch. It wasn't like a massive visual upgrade. And maybe it's better on other consoles. Obviously the Switch isn't a juggernaut, but you know, it looks fine. It looks fine enough. It's certainly scratched the Sonic itch. And like I said, the more I've played it, the more I've enjoyed it. I still don't think it's one of the best 3D Sonic games like a lot of people do. But, you know, it's serviceable. It's a game that I wish I had downloaded instead of bought the physical copy of, because a lot of the time when I'm bored and I want to play something for 15 minutes, I play a Sonic game. And this would be one that I would enjoy just booting up, playing a level or two, and being done with.
Fair enough. All right, so there's honestly been a lot of news over the last couple of weeks, and mainly because of the financial briefing that happened our last podcast 2 weeks ago. But it's going to be a lot to cover, so it's time to go down the warp pipe. And we start with easily the biggest downfall of the Switch. No, not the graphics. Shut up. We speak, of course, about the Joy-Cons. Because Joy-Con drift, it's still a thing, and we don't know why. We know why, but you honestly have to wonder at this point why Nintendo just doesn't fix it. I mean, they were even sued about this thing, so, like, come on. This shouldn't be that hard, Nintendo. And apparently, they have addressed it. Kinda. Doug Bowser did an interview with The Verge, and he goes, quote, "As we've gone through the first 5.5 years of the Nintendo Switch," not exactly accurate, but whatever, "we've observed gameplay, and we've observed as people have returned units how they've worn, and we've been making conscious improvements overall to the Joy-Con, including the analog stick. The latest version, Nintendo Switch OLED, has the same updated analog stick that's now available in the original Nintendo Switch and Nintendo Switch Lite." So, they've been improving it, but whether it'll actually be fixed is debatable. So,
it's like, again, that corporate speak regarding to like how to proceed. Like, the only thing I know, I mean, in my experience, like, some people have said, like, the only recent model, like the Zelda Skyward Sword Zelda Joy-Cons, apparently those are the ones that actually are like the currently best versions of it. So after the Zelda Joy-Cons is now, you should not expect at least a lesser chance of getting Joy-Con drift. Like, obviously, if you're playing with the original release model back in its initial release, then yeah, that obviously you'll be at risk for Joy-Con drift. But like the recent Joy-Cons, like Zelda Joy-Con or the OLED model, then I think we'll have that less likely chance of getting drift. So maybe. Again, it's just, I really hate that corporate speak of like, yeah, we are making a conscious effort, but come on, yes or no?
I just to remind everyone, I I was using my original Joy-Cons up until what was it like 2 weeks ago? Yeah, it was right after Metroid Dread, because I was trying to play Smash because of Sora, still cried during the trailer, and my Joy-Cons, like, the Joy-Con drift was just too bad. It would react some of the time, but not all the time, and then I had to get new ones, and our dear boss Koopa Keith got me some, and I'll be using them heavily for the next week during Pokemon, but mine lasted years, but others have not been so lucky. Like, I remember these issues at launch when everyone was saying, like, oh yeah, it's a crapshoot whether you get a good Joy-Con or not. I'm like, well, that's not good. And now here we are, almost at the end of the next year, and it's like, oh yeah, we're making improvements. No, don't make improvements. Fix the dang thing. It shouldn't be that hard, people. Apparently,
yeah. I wonder
is.
Why it is so hard. I mean, if it was easy, you would think they would have done it by now. It can't. Like you said, they got sued for this. I don't think it's indifference. There's some deep-rooted flaw with Joy-Cons or the Switch itself. I think it's got to be just be the Joy-Cons. But
yeah, because think about it. If this was a like think of like the Wiimote. All right, if something was broken within the motion controls, you could make the argument that Nintendo was still trying to figure out how to, you know, finesse and fine-tune. But this is an analog stick issue. There have been plenty of consoles, past and recent present, that have had analog sticks that I don't remember this issue being brought up. Now, I saw an article that said that, yeah, others have had, you know, a slight kind of drift, but this was so bad that it got its own name in Joy-Con drift. So why is it that this one is being affected more than, you know, your Xbox and Sony controllers and the GameCube controller, or even the ones on the nunchuck for the Wiimote? Like, that was an analog stick. So why is this one being so bad? The world may never know. Especially if Nintendo is not likely to tell us. Oh well. We'll just sue them again. Anyway, next up we have Pokemon Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, which is coming out on Friday. And not surprisingly, the Pokemon company is releasing new trailers and new reveals about what you can expect in this upgraded version. And the big reveal that came recently is that of Ramanos Park. So this is a post-game content, and basically you'll be able to go into an area where you'll be able to catch legendary Pokemon. Now, the difference, though, is that each game will have its own set of legendary Pokemon for you to go and catch from the various regions. So, for example, you got the legendary birds, you got the legendary dogs, you got Rayquaza, you got Mewtwo, and you actually have to find slates to trigger the various encounters. So it's not what was the last game? Sword and Shield, where on what was it? What was the second DLC? Oh, the Crown Tundra.
Crown Tundra.
Crown Tundra, where you had like maneuver a certain way to go and get a certain Pokemon fight in Gigantamax. So yeah. And so, for example, in Pokemon Diamond, you'll be able to get Ho-Oh and the Legendary Dogs. In Pokemon Shining Pearl, you'll be able to get Lugia and the Legendary Birds, which is a Pokemon 2000 reference, obviously. Mewtwo and Rayquaza will also be divided up. And then you, of course, link up with the games, and you'll be able to catch the others. Oh, and Mew is going to be there if you have data from Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu or Let's Go Eevee, which I do. Also, Jirachi will be there if you have data from Pokemon Sword or Shield, which I do! Yay. So, also, where's my Deoxys? Okay, like, that's top tier. Alright, I'm just saying. But yeah, this is gonna be pretty cool content, and then for those who have not played the original Diamond or Pearl, there is an overview trailer. It's about 5 minutes long, and it gets you updated on everything you absolutely need to know about the games. And so, again, those released this Friday, so be sure to check them out. Also, side note, when I was at the Comic-Con on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, one of the things I always look for is Pokemon plushies, because I got myself an adorable Eevee plushie at a recent con, and I'm trying to expand my collection. Got to catch them all. And I found a booth where they made handmade Pokemon plushies meant to be life size. Yeah, they did that. For example, certain Dunsparces are 3 feet long. So guess what I found there? A 3 foot long Dunsparce. Yeah, they did very atypical Pokemon. They did one was Dunsparce. They did a Milotic that was 1/3 scale and was 6 feet long.
That's amazing.
It was. Totally was. And they just like the most random of Pokemon. It wasn't even like, you know, your Pikachus, your Meowths, and you know, your starter Pokemon. They picked like some of the random ones. Like I think they had a Snorunt. They had Joltik, I think. They had one of the weirder Sword and Shield Pokemon. And I'm just like looking at this, and they're like, they're all handmade, and it was just so beautiful. And again, like they were meant to be life size. I'm like, yeah, okay, that puts a lot of things in scale. And the melodic was so impressive, and like they did that one specifically for the con, even though it was only one third scale. So which means if it was life scale, it would have been over 18 feet long. I want one.
Yeah, me too.
I have nowhere to put it, but life finds a way. Maybe we should do like one of the what was like the cargo nets where you like just like attach it to the ceiling and like stuff things in it. That would be awesome. So yeah, anyway. But yeah, that's gonna be cool. I'm looking forward to this, if for no other reason than I want something new to play. But yeah, stay tuned for more on that. Oh, reviews are already very positive about it, so it looks like this is gonna be a worthy addition. Unlike our next topic, Nintendo Switch Online. Yeah. We're still talking about it, because as you recall, it's been bad. Like especially with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack, which got us the Sega Genesis and N64 games, which don't play well at all. And Will, you talked about corporate talk. Well, here it is again, because in that same interview with Doug Bowser, he said, quote, "We're constantly looking for ways to make our online features and those games better and continuing to add value through more services and more games as we go forward. We take the feedback very seriously, and we're continuing to look at ways to improve the overall performance. For us, it's about quality and great content at a great value," end quote. You lying son of a... No, never mind.
It's just kind of weird now because I actually during the time of recording, I believe one of the heads of Xbox, Microsoft, actually said calling for industry-wide to have to allow emulation to preserve old games. Funny enough, and this like Bowser, please, like if you're gonna improve upon the Nintendo Switch Online, especially that expansion pack. One, obviously, one of the basic things, add more games to it right now, because even with like Banjo-Kazooie, sorry, Tyler, and everything else, put in more games on it. And secondly, obviously, have the games run good, because like it's bad enough, like we're running old games on old console, and they can't even do it properly. I mean, heck, look at the recent Grand Theft Auto trilogy. That thing had problems. So, like, it's bad enough that modern day consoles cannot play games from 20 or even 30 years ago. It's like, yeah, like, come on, industry. Like, we have that technology, literally, and you can't even do this? Come on.
Yeah, to reiterate on something, I want to go to one line, and it is the last line he said. For us, it's about quality and great content at a great value. Okay, let's break that down. First of all, about quality, look at all the posts about Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack. There's no quality there, or not a lot of it. Great content, debatable because you're limiting how many games we're getting at a certain point, despite these games being out 20 years ago plus, and saying like, hey, this is worth it, which brings us to a great value. You increase the price by $30 for games that we've played before or haven't played in decades, and you expect us to believe that this is a great value when we could have, and when we've talked about this before, but the Xbox Game Pass and PlayStation Plus offers modern games at full power for half your cost or a fifth of your cost even for Game Pass. It's $10. So try that again. Try and convince us, like, 'cause you're failing. You are failing.
Yeah, like the only way I can probably see it, like how they can definitely rebound is again, but as the situations we mentioned earlier, or personally for me, like if they can include expansion, but at least put it at 50, not 80. 50 will probably be the best competitive price. So that's just my take. That's just my suggestion.
Yeah, it needs to be way cheap, regardless of whether they fixed it or not. But I have no confidence in in them ever doing that at point. I just don't know how anyone could.
They'll say they're going to improve it, but let's be honest, we all know they're not. You know that they thought, and this is a problem with all the industry, especially nowadays. But they thought this was a good idea. They thought we wouldn't react the way we have. They were clearly only thinking about profits, and then they put in little to no work to try and make sure that it worked. We would have waited another month or two for the expansion pack to make sure that it actually, you know, ran well. And instead, they announced it in Nintendo Direct and, you know, were very sly about the price. Then they revealed the price, like, oh, this is a great value. And then it launched, and it's been a disaster. And now they're saying, oh, your feedback is very important. Then here's our feedback, Nintendo. Do it right the first time. You're supposed to be the benchmark of doing it right the first time outside of online things. We've talked about that in the past. And not bringing back certain franchises, whereas my F-Zero. But you're supposed to be the example of, you know, taking your time, doing it right. Look at Breath of the Wild or Metroid Prime 4 or all these other games that got delayed. Smash Brothers. You know, look at those games that got delayed because you wanted to prove the quality. We loved you for that. Why didn't you do that here?
Right. I mean, like this is just a tangent, but because, like, we always seen, like, on Nintendo's channel, like, mainly on YouTube, like, yeah, we see something good, okay, we thumbs up. And, like, especially, like, the Byleth or Steve trailer or this on Nintendo outside, we obviously market that because we don't like it. And I'm not sure you remember the news that apparently YouTube is trying to remove the dislike button. So apparently, they're like, no, our power, like, how we can tell them that this is not a good product?
The trailer for Nintendo's Switch Online Expansion Pack became, like, one of Nintendo's worst reviewed or most disliked video ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's hilarious.
So now, I mean, obviously, we have other avenues of voicing our criticisms, but yeah, like, yeah, don't, like, come on. The dislike button also has a purpose. So yeah. But going back, topic is just like, yeah. Doug Bowser, anybody listening in Nintendo headquarters, just listen.
Yeah,
I know you probably won't. You probably on your top of mountain of capital, but listen.
All right, next up we have some sales news, which is going to be very interesting. We have gotten the first official numbers for the Switch OLED sales in the U.S. I just reiterate, just the U.S. sales. According to, wait for it, Doug Bowser! Alright, in the month of October, 314,000 OLEDs were sold. So, a bit less than what happened with Switch Lite, because if I recall correctly, they sold 1 million in their first month alongside Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. But also, this was always meant to be more of a, what do you want to call it, a quality of life improvement console versus a, like, definitive Switch 2.0 or the Nintendo Switch Pro, which is never coming out, okay? I hate to be the guy that says Santa isn't real, but it's never coming out, all right? But, yeah, so I'm curious of your thoughts on this. Do you feel that this was a good launch for it? And we don't have the worldwide numbers, but let's just assume 500,000 worldwide in its first month. Is that a solid start for the OLED? Tyler, start with you.
Yeah, I would say it's not. You expected with what this product was that it wouldn't do gangbusters. You know, I think the Switch Lite is easier to market. I think it makes more sense as a product. And with all the hype around a potential Pro model, I'm not surprised that this not Pro model didn't do quite as well as I'm sure that Nintendo hoped. Plus, they're having supply issues.
Right, I think
that supply issue is really the biggest story here, because I do think that, you know, the Switch is such a popular console. It still has plenty of momentum. I think that if they were able to get these things in stores, we'd be seeing a slightly different tune here. I don't think the product is great, but I think that their issues with stocking it are probably the number one failure right now, and that's what's holding it back.
I agree.
I agree with that part. As with the whole chip shortage happening in the entire industry, obviously that's kind of the major reason why. Even like on the competitor side, even Sony themselves says like the chip shortage will last way into 2022. So in regards to like getting OLED models to everyone else, yeah, that's obviously going to be the major struggle. And of course, added on top of that is obviously one, many people already have Switches already. Like, why you want to get a moderately or not minorly, correct, upgraded Switch model with just like the the basics, a bigger screen, brighter screen, and a bigger stand, all that is like, yeah, it's, unless you have like the initial release model, then yeah, it's not really a major selling point just for the minor upgrades. So as I said, the rumor mills of the Switch Pro, a better model of it coming down the line, obviously, like, yeah, the consumers do know, like, yeah, something much more better is gonna be coming out later. This is just only meant for if you haven't adopted yet after all these years.
Yeah, so we'll definitely keep our eyes, especially since, you know, Black Friday is coming up, and that might give a slight boost or whatever. But yeah, between chip shortages and the fact that this isn't really a sequel, but more like a slight improvement, it's going to be curious to see how this does in the long term. All right, next up we have Metroid Dread news, because Metroid Dread came out over a month ago now, and the game has apparently had its best start ever for the franchise, and this includes all the games, like the Prime Series, Fusion, Super Metroid, etc., etc. So, according to, wait for it, Doug Bowser, yep, he's back, he said that the game in the U.S. alone has sold 854,000 units in October. And if you recall the UK news, they said that they had already had its biggest launch outside of the original Metroid Prime, and Japan was also doing well. So it's a fair assumption to say that it's already crossed the 1 million mark now that we're well over midway into November, if not just in October alone. So I call that a very big success, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited for the Metroid franchise as a whole. Switch has been known to provide series with big sales boosts, and it seems like Metroid is going to be no exception here. I think that it's done from the incredible reviews to the sales figures, the Metroid franchise has never had this much momentum. For just around the corner, I think that they've got this. I truly think that this is we might be living in the prime of Metroid, so to speak.
The prime of Metroid.
Metroid's prime. Apostrophe S.
Yeah, so would you say that between the 2D and the 3D, we have a fusion event going on?
I would.
that we shouldn't dread the future? No? No? Okay.
Yeah.
no, I agree with what you said. We are at a very good place. And if you hadn't heard, Metroid Dread has been so beloved that it is nominated for Game of the Year by the Game Awards, which are totally not rigged. No, definitely not. I'm still totally not bitter that The Last of Us Part 2 won the Game of the Year last year, even though it totally shouldn't have. No, not bitter at all at that. So, also, Christopher Nolan really doesn't know video games when he said that Animal Crossing New Horizons is a narrative title. I'm just saying. He's like, oh, all these games have great narratives. Do you even game, bro? So, definitely not. But yeah, I'm happy for Dread. Again, there's no way it hasn't crossed 1 million, or if not 1.5 million at this point. And even though we don't know where Prime is, or Prime 4 is right now, this is exciting. And I would be shocked if Nintendo didn't hire Mercury Steam to make another 2D Metroid. Because Yokomoto, the producer of the franchise right now, he wants to continue it. Beyond Dread, to tell the next story after Dread. He wants to keep it going. With these sales, plus the hype for Prime 4, and whatever else may happen, I think they're going to get it. I really do. So
I guess the opportunity is just there for the picking. Like, yeah, they've seen how Dread's been doing. Like, obviously, it will be a long time until Metro Prime 4. All so, right. Yeah, just keep it coming. Let's just keep Samus Aran alive outside. Yeah. There's only so much we can do, so yeah, just keep it going. Yeah.
All right, next up we have even more discussion about key franchises, this time from Pokemon, because the Pokemon Company had an interesting interview via their director of consumer marketing, J.C. Smith. He talked with Axios about how fan feedback really plays into making their games, and he said some really curious stuff. Quote, "There's also a vision for what the creators want to provide, and it's a matter of finding that delicate balance throughout. We have a group of creators and professionals working at the Pokemon Company that have been through a lot, seen and heard a lot. They have a thicker skin than many people do because they've hurt it. End quote. It being, of course, the fan feedback of what fans want. But what do fans want? Well, according to them, one of the biggest things that they often hear, and we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, is the request for deeper and more mature storylines. Especially after some lackluster stories like what happened in Sword and Shield, which I know Tyler has talked about a lot. He goes, quote, "We hear it, and I think the creators definitely understand that there's a desire for maybe something, but we try to focus on making the core accessible to everyone," end quote. And this is interesting because it's very much that divide of trying to make those who have been with you for a while happy, while also trying to be something that new players can access. Because not everyone's going to want that deeper story. Some people just want to play the games to catch Pokemon, while others have been catching Pokemon for, you know, 8 generations now, like myself. And, you know, they want that more connection, a bigger connection with the Pokemon world as a whole. So I do sympathize with their plight of trying to, you know, continue one of the best-selling franchises in history, while also evolving it, pun intended, to new heights, but not forsaking those who might want to jump in late and just try and experience it with open eyes. So we should still give our feedback and our desires, but we also need to understand that they're the ones making the games here, and they're trying to, you know, please everyone as best they can. So we got to be mindful of that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely find myself agreeing with you in that I would like to see more mature stories. But at the same time, Pokemon is so recognizable because of the... I mean, they're sticking with the approach that's got them this far. And it's hard to blame them for that as much as we might like to see them take further steps to kind of make the series more mature. I doubt that it will happen. I hope that it does. And I do think that there's room for multiple styles in the same franchise. So maybe one day they will branch out. But until then, we kind of got what we've got.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat as well. Like, we have seen definitely like different tone shifts in story from the Pokemon series and franchise in general from, like, again, like Gales of Darkness, that game, and everything else. So they're definitely slowly like doing that tone shift, but like right now it is recognizable because of its friendly outlook, friendly image. But I definitely do see like, yeah, they taking that like completely tone shift of like, yeah, let's go full on dark, forget about the kiddie shoes, we're going full on adult teen angst and all that. So I don't know, like I will definitely wouldn't mind seeing that someday.
And obviously, they're still trying to figure out where to take things, because obviously, Sword and Shield was a big advancement with it being the first true fully 3D Pokemon world with, you know, with the wild area. That was a big thing. Then there was DLC versus, what was it? Oh, the Isle of Armor and Crown Tundra. So that was new for them. And they're still trying to grow things. So there's still room for it to branch out and be different while still embracing its core. So, you know, we do have to be a little patient. I know it's hard. It's so hard for us gamers, but we need to try, okay? Do it for the Pokemon, okay? All right, next up, Switch has Twitch.
Yeah.
That's a story. That's
pretty much it, yes.
That's a story. That's a story. That's it right there. I mean, cool.
I mean, sure, it's nice, fine. I mean, obviously with other systems like PS4, Xbox 3, and every your device, including your phone, has Twitch. So now, Switch and has Twitch. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I just, because I actually have downloaded Twitch on my Switch. Oh, man, that's going to sound so weird now. And overall, it actually holds up pretty nicely. Like, the only thing is a bit changed is because you cannot type on to chat with like the chat rooms on Twitch rooms, so you have to actually use your phone as the chat logs to actually enter any comments. So that's kind of the little minor downside of it, but overall the performance on having Twitch on Switch is pretty decent, so it's nice. I mean, about time, but felt later never, so I don't mind the addition.
you guys loving the Twitch on Switch thing makes me want to recommend an author to you. I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Dr. Seuss. Really good at the writing. You should check him out.
Oh, Tyler, you have no idea. I am using all of my not inconsiderable willpower to not do a massive string sentence with all the words that rhymes with Switch.
I know.
And Switch.
I can sense it. I can see it.
It's so hard because I got a good one, but it's a slightly profane, and it's a lot. It's not profane because I'm using in the actual like nature documentary text. But still, like, I'm resisting so hard because I want to do it, but I will not. I will not. All right. Because I'm not gonna do it. Nope, not gonna do it.
We're PG. We are PG podcast.
No, it's not. I'm not using it in the profane sense. I'm using it in the nature documentary sense. All right, because it was that way before it became a swear word. Anyway, but I shall move on before this gets disastrous. All right. So our final news story is that of Mario. No, not the movie, and no, Chris Pratt has not been removed as the voice of Mario. That's sadly something we still have to live with. Anyway, Shigeru Miyamoto talked during the financial briefing, and he was asked about how Nintendo is trying to push Mario forward in regards to the 3D games like Odyssey and Galaxy before them. So he said, quote, "As for the difference between 2D Mario and 3D Mario, let me explain by describing the background for the development of the Wii game New Super Mario Bros. Wii, which was released in 2009. At the time, it felt like we were created a new installment in a new Super Mario series, which by then had expanded into 3D. It became more complicated. After the release of Super Mario Galaxy in 2007, the goal was to develop a more accessible 3D Mario game, and the result was New Super Mario Bros. Wii, a basic side-scrolling Super Mario game that even new players could easily play. That later led to the release of the even simpler Super Mario Run game. When we develop software, we strive to incorporate new elements, but at the same time, we want to make it easy for even first-time players to have fun. Recently, people of all generations have enjoyed the 3D Mario game Super Mario Odyssey. So for 3D Mario going forward, we want to try expanding further in new ways." End quote. So clearly, much like the Pokemon Company, ironically enough, they want to push things like Galaxy and Odyssey did in their own ways, while also maintaining that core because they know that people like playing Mario games, but they also like playing different kinds of Mario games, and thus want to keep making good Mario games, which I can appreciate.
Yeah, there's not too many surprises in there. I'm excited to see what's next. I didn't really feel like we gleaned a ton from Miyamoto there.
Not really.
But, you know, it's Mario. You know that they're going to come up with some cool angle, and the next game is going to be tremendous.
In theory.
Yeah, they always had that ace in the card we're going to Mario. Like, again, Odyssey, nobody expected it, but and we love it to death. And, yeah, it's been quite some years now since then, so I can only imagine what's next for Mario, like, while we're still alive. Like, I really want to see, like, yeah, what's next? We went to space, we went to see dinosaurs, what's next? Are we going to go through time once more? I don't know.
Yeah, for them, the question is always just how they want to twist the formula, because at first it was, you know, keep it contained, go to, you know, like, the look at the difference between, like, Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxy. I mean, you think, like, that's light years different, and it is in certain ways, but it's still the core element of Mario going to other worlds, just doing it in a different way. And then, you know, you have Odyssey, which is, we're going to all these different continents on one world, and then to the moon. You know, you're still doing different things, and all these different lands have different elements that you can play as, but it's still the core Mario title. And Odyssey, obviously, was incredible and worthy of a Game of the Year nomination. So how do you top that? Well, you see what worked, you see what didn't, you're fine, you alter a little bit. No hats. All right, are we comfortable in saying that this time around? Like, no hats. All right, you did it. Let's move on.
Yeah.
I'm done with Cappy, yes.
And not just that, but like, I will forever maintain that the boss fights with Bowser were the weakest. All right, because it's the same mechanic over and over again. He's going to punch you with his hat. You got to take it off of him. And then in the end game, you weren't even really fighting Bowser. You were just knocking him unconscious so you could take control of him to, you know, go and get out of the exploding castle. So, like, no, I'm not going to make that joke. Like, do better by Bowser, all right? He deserves it, okay? I know he's the bad guy, but he's also the head of Nintendo. Somehow. All right? And no, I won't get tired of that joke. How did the last name Bowser come around? Like, this was a story from, I think, like 2 weeks ago. There was a hacker emulator dude, also named Bowser, and Nintendo won a court case against the guy. And I was like, wait a minute, isn't that the head of Nintendo, that Bowser? Like, no, that was Mike Bowser. This is that the head of Nintendo is Doug Bowser. But it's like, how can there be so many people with the last name of Bowser? All right.
I know. What's the nation of origin? That's my question.
Exactly. And don't say Mushroom Kingdom. But isn't it though? No. But like, if like Mario, that's a regular name. Luigi, little less common. It's very Italian. Like those are different things. But Bowser as a last name, how did that? You know what? That's why God made Google. Let's do it. What nation of origin does the name Bowser come from? Okay, here we go. There we go. All right. You guys are not going to get this.
Is it?
Bowser is a surname, obviously. It is of Norman origin and was given to a person who frequently used the informal Norman greeting Beausail, which means good sir or fine sir.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. So we got Norman to blame. Screw you, Norman. No, I'm just joking. apparently, and I'm going deeper into this rabbit hole, the surname of Bowser is the 26,177th most frequent surname in the world. It is borne by approximately 1 in 354,660 people. The last name is, here's not a shock. The last name is most frequently occurring in the United States, where it is held by 18,523 people.
18,000?
Yes. It is a large family, and they are indeed a Koopa army.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is, yeah, that's, I had no idea. I really like. I was amazed when I heard about Doug Bowser. Now I'm finding out there is 18,000 plus people out there who are also named Bowser. All I can say is hi, and do you want to come to our podcast? So yeah, that's the more you know. All right, and now we head to our main event, because this week, in fact, yesterday at the time of this recording, a major event shook the nerddom. It was the launch / relaunch of G4. It was a hilariously chaotic and catastrophic relaunch, and that was almost by design at points. And they even had a DJ Cat called DJ Catastrophic. He was in a spacesuit made by Adam Savage. I am not lying at all. So, no, I'm serious, I'm not. But as a guy who is a 100% nerd and obviously an incredible host, I was wondering, what would it be like to host a show on G4? And I've actually already submitted an idea to them once upon a time, but what if we made this more Nintendo-based? What if we had a little bit of fun and each of us made our own pitch to G4 for a Nintendo-based streaming / fun show? And we're going to do this a meeting of the NAP Secret Society. I was going to do Nintendo discussion, but it's not a discussion. We are each going to make our pitches, and we're going to have a little fun with it. So, for mine, I am not afraid to say that I am an average gamer. I have no shame in that. I play mainly one system, that is Nintendo. I used to play PlayStation until they got really, really expensive. And now I enjoy my Nintendo games. And my goal with every single one is I play the game, I beat the game, and I move on. And then occasionally I will come back to the game like I do with Phoenix Wright or The World Ends With You or certain other titles. But there was a time when I thought I was a good gamer, especially in the realm of Super Smash Brothers. Because there was a time when I was undefeated in Super Smash Brothers Brawl until I accidentally blabbed about that at a college course, and then my course instructor decided to teach me a lesson, and so he put me against the best person in the class, who apparently was a high-level Smash Brothers player, and he totally beat me with like 5 lives left. Anyway, so I thought I got better after that, and then I met Tyler, who absolutely schooled me in Ultimate with multiple characters, and I believe the only time I actually ever beat him was in a triple threat match where Will was involved. Now, Mario Kart, I have beaten him, but Smash Brothers, not so much.
Allegedly. There's no tape.
It's called my memory, Tyler. It's called my memory. So my idea for a G4 show based in the realm of Nintendo is Todd can't play dot, dot, dot. And simply put, I will be put into certain games as people are watching, like a regular Twitch live stream, and I will show that I try hard to be good at games, but I, at times, very much fail. And we'll start with Smash Brothers, because that's the easy one, you know, that's the most fun one, and I'll have them, you know, giving me ideas on who to play, or trying to give me tips on how to do better with these characters, and I'll have, like, even that, I'll set up rooms so that they can come and join me and have like nice big interactive experience. We'll set up like totally crazy rooms with items and, you know, speeds and everything. But then we'll go deeper. You'll see me playing new games. Like if I had done Dread on a stream, it would have shown very quickly that I was not that good. I had to use a guide multiple times to find my way around the giant world that was Dread. And then, you know, Pokemon I would do better at. Pokemon I am very confident in my skills, or at least more or less. I was never like Tyler, who was, you know, EV train, and everything. So I would do well at that. Let's see. What were the other games? What games came out this year? World Ends With You. Like, that one was hard, but I had a lot of fun with it. And I would put myself out there and acknowledge that I am not the best gamer out there, but I would try. And I would hope that by showing this, that the fans would connect with me and that they would try and help me get better so that one day, I can beat Tyler in Smash Bros.
The road to beating me in Smash.
A man can dream. So,
I love that. That'd be great. For me to make guest spots. Is he ready now?
Yeah, there you go. That could be like a monthly event episode. Todd versus Tyler.
Yes.
Is he ready? Yeah. There you go. See, there you go. And then we could get Will on there. We could do Mario Kart so that there will be tape of me beating you guys. All right. And then should Mario Kart 9 ever come out, we can see how good or bad I am in that. And I just think this will be fun because I've heard people say, and this is fair for them to say this, but that the reason a lot of people watch Twitch streamers is because they like watching good players. Like Ninja. Like he was so popular because he was honestly one of the first people playing Fortnite in a major way. And he spent so much time in it that he was able to be really good in it, even when people were trying to kill him because he's Ninja in the game, obviously. But I think there's a fun in just watching a person try to be good at a game and maybe not doing so well, you know, for that comedy element, because I'm sure I would be very photogenic in regards to like, okay, I got him now, I got you, Tyler, no, stop, Tyler, stop it, and then he killed me, and I'm just like, I lost again, why?
Yeah.
Why did I lose again, Tyler? Because you suck, Todd. I know.
I would not be so cruel.
Oh, come on, for the camera, come
for the
on.
Camera, if you told me to play it up, I would.
I would just tell you to do what comes naturally.
I would do the wrestler intros. I'd be the heel. Oh, I'd come in. We'd put have the strobe lights going on, look real intimidating.
There you go. But I just think that would be a lot of fun because I would want to be interactive and I would want the community to try to help me and like, you know, use this technique, do this, try and play this character. It might suit your style better. And then as we go from game to game, just have fun experiences, because especially with 2022, there are so many big games like Advance Wars. I would love to see how I would do in that, because I haven't played Advance Wars since DS and Days of Ruin. So I would love to see how my Fire Emblem brain comes out in that. Or if we get a Fire Emblem remake, that would be an awesome, because I love Fire Emblem and I feel like I do good in Fire Emblem, but even I make mistakes and accidentally get a character killed until I totally restart because I'm not going to go through a playthrough with the character dying. So I just think that Todd can't play dot 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 would just be a fun show, a kind of an antithesis to all the Twitch streams where like you have to be like super good. I'm fine being average. I'm average in virtually everything else except my fro. So why not showcase that to the world and have fun with it? So there you go. All right, Tyler, how about you?
So I have two ideas for a show. One is rated PG-13, so we'll come back to that one.
I-O!
The first idea is, it's called Backlog Quest. And I, like every gamer, have an extremely ridiculous backlog. There's just at least 30 games on it at all times. I will never get to 90% of those games, even though I dream one day of playing them all. And I believe that many gamers out there also are in that same boat. So the premise of the show is basically, we're looking at game reviews basically here, but I'm going back and I'm replaying games that people may have missed, games that I think underperformed sales-wise, and I'm shining a light on those titles. We're going to break down, you know, everything you could possibly want to know about the game, showcase it, gas it up, and tell you if it's worth your time to go back and play it. So that's show number one. Show number two, rated PG-13. If you are not 13, it's time for you to skip ahead. There is a show on the History Channel called Drunk History.
Drunk History.
Wait, that's actually on the History Channel? I thought it was a YouTube show.
I believe it's the History Channel, where people they are intoxicated and they tell you stories about history, and they're all true, and their people are goofy because they're intoxicated. Blah blah blah. Well, we're not talking about drunk games here, but there is a certain plant, and I'm not even going to talk about it. That you can smoke a little plant.
Oh God!
And experience a new game, old games, the games that aren't that good, and we review these games and we tell you, are they good? While you have enjoying some of said plant, and I think what made me think about this was Nickelodeon All Stars Brawl. I talked about this show before before. Nickelodeon All Stars Brawl it's an okay game. You know, it's not a great game. It's a Smash Bros. Clone. It's not as good as Super Smash Bros. There is no time that you would rather play Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl than Super Smash Bros. Unless you have enjoyed a little of some said plant, in which case Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl is like the most hilarious game of all times. And I feel like that's probably true for many games. You know, you can experience them totally differently, and we can discuss whether the game is worth playing while, you know, or not worth playing while, you know, is it redeemable under X circumstance? And I think it's a hit. I think it's an absolute hit. I've looked on YouTube. Nobody's doing it.
Gee, I wonder why.
Well, it's probably because YouTube is not a fan of, you know, said terminology. However, I think I've got a hit on my said plant. Yes.
I don't know if you've actually thought of a title for the show, but it's incredibly obvious what it should be.
Please.
Well, since you're technically looking at this as a show where you use said plant to have an experience, and whether that this game that you play is enhanced by this experience, obvious name for the show is High Score.
That's great. That's amazing.
You're welcome.
I love it. That would beat the algorithm, too.
It would be the algorithm.
What are they? That's the thing. You have to refer to it as. You have to come up with creative names for the plant.
Yeah,
you know? And plus, again, just adding Minecraft to it, and it would just boom it like crazy. Just add Minecraft to it.
There you go.
Wouldn't it be? I just feel like it'd be really funny too to constantly see how ridiculous your euphemism for said plant could possibly be. You know, you could get really ridiculous and really deep, and I think it would be a hit comedy show.
Uh-huh. Like we now return you to the G-rated version of the Nintendo Entertainment. I do really like your backlog idea because, like, especially then if you do like a playthrough of a part of the game to showcase why they should play it, you know, and you dedicate like a week to every game that's in your backlog.
Right.
That would definitely be cool because, like you said, you just did a Sonic Ultimate. Or Sonic Colors Ultimate. So like that would be a good example. Or since Will is playing Shin Megami Tensei 5, maybe you go and replay Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse, because I know you played that one. You know, and you showcase that one. Also, I want to go back to my idea. I would totally play Shin Megami Tensei 5. just to see how hard it is, and then like be like, why is it so hard? And then Will will be like, welcome to the world, noob. I'm like, oh, I know, Will. Don't I know it? I thought this was supposed to be Persona 5. Oops. All right, Will, take it away. What's yours?
For me, I was thinking regarding to, like, forgive me for having a boomer mindset, and just kind of like we alluded earlier in our talks in the podcast, but it's just regarding this whole where there's so many times like, oh, we want to have a shiny AAA title. Oh, like bring in, I don't know, GTA, the next GTA, or I don't know, like Mario Kart 9, all these things. But like, I'm not sure if anybody has noticed. I mean, like, rare and few now, like, these modern games have no soul, or even to the point of it being so broken, it's unplayable. So, for me, I was thinking regarding to a show, and, like, regarding to this old saying, but with the gaming twist, respect your old games. It's, like, I was thinking in terms of, like, respect your elders, but respect your old games, because we have seen so many stories, including obviously with the recent emulation story of like of any games in the industry, like, and of course with the Nintendo situation of like ND4, of course the SNES classics, all that. Sure, like people are still buying these games, but now I think it's about time that we kind of like bring back and really enforce that idea of like keeping these old games alive, like know your roots, respect your elders, and all that, and like. I imagine that we're going to show like all of these such old games like Super Mario World. We play on that. Like, yeah, this is the game that has brought you like other things like Super Mario 3D World. Like, this game laid the groundwork. Like, if you do not know about this game, then you have no right to call yourself a gamer. You have know your history, know where you come from, because like at the rate we're going to digital games now is just like, yeah. That's why, like, respect your old titles, respect the CDs, the Blu-rays, all that, the game cartridges, because by the once the material is gone, it's gone. It's gonna be hard to even try to revitalize all these old games. So, like, I don't know. Like, I imagine plugging up your N64. Like, yeah, you want to know like the original multiplayer game that broke friendships? Yeah, play the original Mario Party. Oh, okay. You even played GoldenEye 64. That was a great game that. Like, yeah, you and your fancy multiplayer online 50 frames per second. We had GoldenEye. We had our job. Like, we had the golden gun mode. All these great titles. Like, be it single player or multiplayer, like Mario, or I'm gonna forever preach Skies of Arcadia. And just, yeah, have a segment on G4. Like, respect your old games. Respect, like, the origins, like, yeah, people are clamoring on Final Fantasy VII. Like, see where Final Fantasy VII Remake came from and all that. So, for me, that's kind of like the show I would like to see on G4. Like, respect your old games, keep them. You never know when you're gonna need them again. So, yeah. Yes.
As a guy who loves history, I like that idea. Thanks. For a show. I think you could do a great job of tracing back mechanics in current games and showing. You know, this is where the origin of this game design philosophy came from. I would find that stuff fascinating. And I also think it would be great if you were fried and you and you had this history discussion. I think if you add that element in, we've got a real winner here.
Gosh, dang it, Tyler.
I just had a tease, Todd.
Yeah. I was going to praise Will, but I'm just shaking my head. I'm trying to picture Will fried. It's not pretty. It's not
pretty. I'm not just it's like I had. Would be funny to probably somebody influenced that, you know. But again, like I do have my medical switch. But what you want me to bring like that old G4? You want me to go even more looter? I mean, as my moniker.
No, so, trust me, I know. Oh, trust me, I know you would happily do a show on the second Kagura's of the world.
Yeah, we got to do a rated R show from Will.
I mean, like, if you still remember back in the OG 4 days, again, there was that old sideshow, which is Video Game Vixens, if you remember that show.
Vaguely.
Yeah,
what was it, like the cutscene show, and there was, like, Nocturnal Emissions, so they could do, like, the darker side of gaming. And they even had an adult entertainment show, so that's very much old school G4. But yeah, it's like, we're trying to be better for the children, Will. And Tyler, Mr. High Score.
Sorry, my
Yeah,
bad.
I also
Hey, you
wanted.
gave me the name. When it becomes a hit
It's
show,
true. I did give you the name. I mean,
credit to you. Listen, credit to you.
it's what I do. But like you were saying, we got to use a plant, and we're rating games. It's right there.
Yeah,
It's right there.
you were
So
right. You
thank
were right.
you.
It was right
Oh
there.
wait, I was right. That's why I'm the
You
host.
were.
Anyways, but
Jeez.
no, I do like the idea of doing that, and it's different from Tyler's backlog because backlogs is just I have had time to play these games versus your Spectre Gaming Elders or whatever is respect the history of gaming, and there's a lot of ways you could play that with that like spiritual successors. You could spend like a week or so focusing on one game and then spend the next week focusing on the spiritual successor and comparing the two. Like a great example would be Mario and Legend of the Seven Stars versus Paper Mario. That would be really fun right now. And then seeing where Paper Mario went off the rails. Moving on. So I had to get that
Sticker
out.
Star, we all know where it went off the
Yeah,
rails.
it's true. It's true, but it only got worse. It only got worse. Anyway. So I actually like these ideas. Yes, even High Score, I
Yeah,
actually think they
yep.
would do. Let's not forget that old school G4 always had a special 420 episode. So it's
Right. Yep.
actually not out of the realm of possibility. They even went to Copenhagen one time. I remember that. They went to Copenhagen and they did the Saw opening where Kevin almost killed Olivia, and it was a thing. So welcome back, G4. So we I and for the record, ladies and gentlemen, I did not just do this to have some fun and to see what the guys would come up with. Once we publish this episode, I am totally going to tag G4 this podcast. I will give them the timestamp on where we start pitching our ideas. And if we hear back from them, I will let you know. Even if for no other reason they say that High Score is like the greatest title idea for what ever. I will see what they say. We will not get hired more than likely, but at least we could say we tried and that is half the battle. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, we recently retired the polls for now,
Wait.
but we're going to continue to end the episode by saying, Tyler!
Tyler!
So
So it's a habit. In fact, I'll put this to you guys. Do you want to do a poll about our ideas? Because we have four, so that fits a full poll.
we do have four.
Okay,
I
okay,
listen.
okay, okay.
I we'll go for it. We'll go for it.
Okay, so which of our ideas, so this does entail that you have to listen to the podcast. If you can put that in
Right.
the tweet, Tyler, do put it because that is essential.
Yes,
So
I will post the poll after the episode is published. I'll
that's
post it
fair.
tomorrow.
That's fair. So listen to the podcast, obviously, and then which of these ideas do you think would be a good focus a gaming slash Nintendo focus show on G4? Todd can't play .. High Score. Gods, the backlog, or respect your gaming elders, or however you want to phrase that.
Like respect. I will. Yeah, I think that probably is a better type. But I was like thinking like respect your old games, like something like that. But your respect your gaming elders.
Okay, whichever one fits best in the poll, Tyler. So
Perfect.
yeah, I'm very curious. We all know High Score is going to win, but I we have to be honest with ourselves. Okay. So yeah, let us know, and of course, let us know what your thoughts on the Joy-Con issues. And have you been playing Shin Megami Tensei V? Have you enjoying it? Are you getting Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl? Are you happy about the sales news for Dread and OLED? What do you think is the future of Mario and 3D and everything else? Let us know in the comments below. So
And who
for
do you think is going to win when Will and I play Super Mario Party this week? Let us know.
Allegedly,
It's
they've been
going to be
trying to do
me.
this for weeks. Allegedly.
This week for sure, though.
Sorry. So for Tellius, Tyler, Wario, Will, I am Triforce Todd. And ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So raise the flag.